Well, experts estimate that about 11 million, there are about 11 million people in the U.S., 90% of whom are female, suffering from either anorexia or bulimia. It's a tough disorder to deal with, or tough disorders to deal with. I had a member of my own family some years back who had an eating disorder, and it's so I know exactly how difficult it can be for not only the individual but for the family. We're going to be talking with a couple of people today about eating disorders and how you can deal with them. Our guests with me today, Dr. Ted Welson, who's a medical director of eating disorder services at Rogers Memorial Hospital in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Dr. Welson, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry.
And also with us today, Stacy McNett of Madison's, recovering from bulimia nervosa. She founded a community information resource on eating disorders and its treatment called Seeds of Hope. And it's hosting the first annual Crisis to Action Conference. That's going to be coming up. We'll talk about that with her and many other things as well. Actually, it's coming up Saturday, February 17th at Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center in Madison. And Dr. Welson, as a matter of fact, is the keynote speaker. So it's great to have them both with us. And certainly if you have questions or comments, maybe you have a family member or maybe you suspect a family member is suffering from one of these illnesses, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, at 263-1890. Give a call. And Stacy McNett, welcome to you. Thank you, Larry. Thank you very much for being with us today. Well, sounds like, 11 million people, Dr. Welson, that's a lot of people.
Well, that's a lot of people with anorexia and bulimia. It's not just the number of people. The cost of this illness is great. For everybody who develops anorexia nervosa, it costs approximately $100,000 to treat that person. The medical complications are severe, increased risk of osteoporosis, increased death rate. And so it's a crisis that is certainly not the most common psychiatric illness we have. But really, when it hits, it is really devastating on a number of different levels.
Just ask you and one more follow-up to that. 40 years ago, 30 years ago, or 50 years ago, did we have this high an incidence of these problems?
Well, no. The rates of bulimia nervosa have gone up over the last 50 years. And it wasn't a real common problem, and I think that environmental expectations in terms of body image have played a big role in that. The rates of bulimia have leveled off and anorexia, but what's somewhat disturbing is that the average age of someone seeking treatment is now below the age of 18, and that's shifted over the last couple of years. The group that we are seeing significant increases in rates, though, are men with eating disorders, which is obviously a portion of the total number, but with the changes in our society relative to men and food and weight, we are seeing that group develop more eating disorders, and I think we'll continue to see that.
Well, Stacy McNett, you look great.
Thank you. I feel great.
You feel great. Tell us your story about your battle, those things happen.
Well, I started with bulimia nervosa with my eating disorder, started suffering from that at the age of 19 in college. The pressures from being away from home, you know, a new environment, expectations that one puts on themselves, it was overwhelming, and it just manifested itself into an eating disorder, which was devastating and exhausting, shameful. You felt disgusted. Mm-hmm. For 23 years, I suffered with it. And at the age of 40, I was really noticing the physical signs and symptoms, complications, and decided it was time to do something. I was angry with the eating disorder and ready to recover. So at that point, I went to seek treatment.
And treatment for you was, there are specific treatment programs.
Correct.
Yeah,
right.
Maybe Dr. Welson can talk a little about that as well.
I think that the main message about treatment is that treatment is effective and that really you can't control what type of treatment you need, but if you get the treatment that you need, it is effective. And I think Stacy is a great example of this. This disorder is not something that people have to live with the rest of their lives. They can recover. And obviously, the different types of treatment are kind of geared towards how severe someone may be. If someone is really medically compromised from their eating disorder, then they often need 24-hour care. But the majority of people are treated in outpatient settings.
And let's turn back to you, Stacy, for a minute just to talk about Seeds of Hope.
Mm-hmm.
So you must have gotten inspired. And
I did. Well, the reason or the coming to being of Seeds of Hope came, it was a concept that came to me during my treatment. I had realized that there were so many individuals out there who weren't able to get treatment, either inpatient, outpatient, due to lack of little to no insurance, or they had exhausted their insurance coverages. And it really bothered me, the point that what are these people doing to get help? You know, do we let them suffer and potentially die, or do we do something about it? And so I have this passion to get out and help. And so we provide education, prevention, and support for eating disorders at Seeds of Hope, and are a great resource of information for families, individuals out there who are at the point of trying to find treatment for their loved ones or for themselves.
Hmm. And the organization is a volunteer organization, or is it?
It is a community nonprofit outreach organization. We go out to the community. One of our main focuses is getting out to schools with prevention and support programs. As Dr. Weltzien stated before, that it is rampant among adolescents at this point, and even into the upper grades in grade school, elementary school. And we really need to get out and start prevention programs and also offer support programs within the schools. And that is one of the biggest services that we provide, other than also support groups and education workshops for those who are suffering, as well as for their families and friends who can't, you know, who don't have the option to go out and seek treatment elsewhere.
Yeah. Talking with Dr. Ted Weltzien and Stacy McNatt today about eating disorders and zeroing in on bulimia for one and anorexia for the other. And certainly if you have some questions or comments about these illnesses or a story to share, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. 263-1890. Doctor, maybe we should talk a little bit about sort of the basics of, I think many people have an idea about what bulimia is, what anorexia is, but let's talk a little about some of the specifics relating to them.
The anorexia nervosa is an illness that is characterized simply by not eating, and people will lose weight, most typically get to a weight that really compromises their medical functioning. They'll, in the case of women, lose their menstrual period, will typically weigh about 20 to 30 pounds below what they should weigh to function normally in terms of their weight. And then they have associated cognitive changes, for example, placing all the value on their weight. So whatever they weigh, whatever they eat really determines how they view themselves in terms of self-esteem. And they tend to isolate, they tend to avoid and pull back from relationships. It tends to lead to reduced self-esteem, increased rates of depression, and increased rates of increased risk of suicide. A recent study shows that one of the main causes of death for people with eating disorders is not just malnutrition, but also depression and suicide. Mm. Bulimia, conversely, is really overeating, although most people with bulimia actually start out wanting to not eat. It's just that they can't do it. They can't restrict their food intake to the point where they lose weight, and so they end up eating, either initially eating and then feeling guilty about it and trying to redouble their efforts to not eat, and ultimately get into this cycle of trying not to eat, overeating, feel guilty, and at some point they make that critical decision to really go to the extreme to deal with it, and that's really where self-induced vomiting comes in. And once that pattern starts, not everybody goes on to develop bulimia, but that's really where the switch is flipped, so to speak, mm-hmm. and you can get people who are binging and purging up to 20 times a day.
Oh boy.
Very disabling illness, and really a public health crisis for young women, as Stacy was saying.
Let's take a call. Lorena in Franklin, we'll give you a chance. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I am calling because I was recently a patient at Rogers, and I am recovering. And I just wanted to let people know out there that there's definitely hope, and I have recovered. And I want to say that Rogers was great, but also I discovered a spiritual path, and I know that anorexia takes away everything. And I think the spiritual aspect is very important in treatment and recovery as well. And thank you for the opportunity to be on the air.
Thank you very much for calling. Well, that's good. Stacey, we'll comment from you.
I completely agree with her. As for myself, really, spirituality was the strengthening tool that I had to really pull me through this. I think it's wonderful if an individual can tap into that. It does. You can draw great strength from that.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Welty?
Well, yeah, I think that one of the most interesting things about recovery is that people want always talk about how to improve your self-esteem, how to reduce your concern about body image and these types of things. You really need to replace it with something. Mm-hmm. It's not so much trying to get rid of something that's bad. You have to fill it up with something that's good. And I think that spirituality, certain other positive things in people's lives are a critical role in their recovery because you really need to recover for something. And so I'm glad to hear someone had a good experience in Rogers. But I think the thing is, this message, which I think is Stacy's message in the conference this weekend, is that people get better. And, you know, for this person, spirituality was a very important part of that. But, you know, there's a number of different things that people can do to improve their chances of recovery. And it's a bit of a journey. And it's really nice to hear this person is doing well.
Yeah. Dr. Ted Weltzien, medical director of Eating Disorder Services at Rogers Memorial Hospital in Oconomowoc. Stacy McNett, our other guest of Madison, recovering from bulimia nervosa, and she founded a community information resource on eating disorders and its treatment, and it's called Seeds of Hope. We'll talk some more with them about that conference that's coming up and certainly answer your questions about eating disorders as we visit with them. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Our topic, eating disorders. We're zeroing in on anorexia and bulimia today with our two guests, Dr. Ted Weltzien, who is Medical Director of Eating Disorder Services at Rogers Memorial Hospital in Oconomowoc, and Stacy McNatt of Madison, recovering from bulimia. She founded a community information resource on eating disorders and its treatment. It's called Seeds of Hope. It's hosting the first annual Crisis to Action Conference Saturday, February 17th at Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center in Madison. Dr. Weltzien is the keynote speaker, and we'll be giving you information on how you might get involved in that as we move along here today. So you have questions about the conference or questions about the treatment or about of eating disorders, certainly you're welcome to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's take a call. Charles and Viola will give you an opportunity now. Charles, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. My daughter is 24 years old, and she's all through high school. She's been sort of like underweight to me. But I was just wondering if that would be something that a person would know that they had, or would they deny to themselves that they had?
Well, that's a good question. I'll ask both of our guests that. Stacy McNabb?
Well, I can tell you that my parents were concerned and asked me several times, and with an eating disorder, you become a master at lying because you don't want anybody to know. It's humiliating. You just feel awful about yourself. You're embarrassed. So definitely telling the truth about that would be difficult to admit to.
Dr. Weltzien?
Yeah, I think the statistics kind of underscore the amount of whether it's lying or just concealing or not being able to be open and honest about something. But typically people have a duration of about 5 years between the onset of their eating disorder and when they seek treatment. So every patient with an eating disorder really is at some point in their illness going to conceal their illness, lie about it, and really part of the first step in getting better is admitting there's a problem. Now, I think the there is also a certain small group of people who really don't know they have an eating disorder, mm-hmm. and usually those are people who may not be aware of eating disorders, or the illness may not be so severe that it becomes totally obvious. But I think that if there is a concern, going and seeing someone, getting an evaluation, and really finding out, is there a problem? I mean, there could be a mild eating disorder, but your daughter, for example, could be at risk for osteoporosis down the line. And so I think that from a health standpoint, I think it is a really good question to ask, is my daughter healthy? And if she is, that's great. If she isn't, then is it as a result of an eating disorder, or maybe just more improved education about nutrition or things like that?
And what do you, in Charles' case here, or in anybody else's case, if you have a daughter or son, for that matter, that you worry about, what would be some of the signs? Are there any signs that a person can look to, or what should someone in his position be doing?
Well, I think that probably in Charles's situation, I think that probably the most important thing would be to make sure that that there are kind of physiological signs of healthy nutrition, like normal menstrual periods is kind of probably the best indicator in women. We know that women, even without eating disorders, if they aren't getting enough nutrition, that's kind of the first thing to go. And that's important because not only in terms of just a measure of normal physiology, but that greatly increases your risk for osteoporosis, as well as potentially other problems, maybe increased risk for cancer down the line, increased cardiovascular risk. I mean, there are a bunch of things that normal hormones in women protect them from. So that's the first thing. And then I think the other signs are kind of emotional signs. In other words, people who are moody. I don't know if Stacy can
very,
kind of...
Very, very. Never even keeled.
But moodiness is a real sign when you're living with someone. People talk about walking around on eggshells around people with eating disorders. And that's because you really... the eating disorder really takes away their ability to really be able to tolerate stress, cope with things in healthy ways. And so if you're around people like this, I mean, you can't do anything right. They're always reacting to things. And so depression, moodiness, withdrawing from friends, low self-esteem, not eating with people. We'll have people who haven't eaten a meal with their family in 10 years. I mean, that's not normal.
No.
Those are just a portion of the list of the things that you can see. But I would say get your daughter checked out, because even if it isn't an eating disorder, you want to know if she's healthy or not.
So do you go to your regular general practice physician for that, or where do you go?
Well, I think that's a very good question, Larry. Ideally, you would like to go to see a specialist, someone who can specialize in treating eating disorders, diagnosing, making recommendations, and then treatment. But you know, in this case, it's not so much treatment, it's more getting a good assessment. So I think that you could call your insurance plan, ask them if there's someone who specializes in eating disorders you could see. And I think that would be the best thing, is to find someone who has some experience with this, so that you're not going to go in and just have someone say, you know, well, yeah, it doesn't seem like a problem, or,
yeah,
you know, kind of dismiss it. And I think that so I would see someone who has had experience and is kind of identified as an expert in the field to make that assessment.
All right. Good luck, Charles.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And let's turn to Tom and Madison next. Tom, hi to you.
Hello. This may seem like a layman's approach, and I am admittedly a layman, but a practical treatment to me would seem to be medical marijuana, the side effects of which are going to increase appetite, reduce inhibition, that kind of thing, and settle stomach. I just wanted to throw that out there, and I'll take any comments off the air.
Well, Tom actually has a very good idea. In fact, the we live in a society where medication can treat anything. Well, in fact, Tom, there have been government-sponsored pharmaceutical trials with anorexia and marijuana, and it has not been shown to increase food intake in women with anorexia. I mean, just to kind of a couple of statistics on this, there's not one FDA-approved medication for anorexia. In other words, where anorexia is the primary indication. So the treatment really is not medication. The treatment is a combination of nutritional rehabilitation, typically weight gain, not binging and purging, as well as psychotherapy, primarily cognitive, behavioral, and family therapy.
And I appreciate your call, Tom, very much. Thank you.
Again.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. There's no pill for this.
There is no pill, unfortunately, or fortunately. I mean, depending on how you look at it, one of the things about the treatment of eating disorders is, I think Stacy can speak to this probably better than I can. But you really grow. I mean, to recover, really, you need to grow as a person because you need to figure out a different way of doing it.
You really have to go through a journey of finding out who you are and who you want to be. And and then putting a plan in place along with the treatment, how do you achieve that? And you have to want to recover.
Yeah, yeah. Ann in New Auburn, your turn. Hi, Ann. Thanks for calling.
Yes. My daughter displayed, anorexia behavior in her senior year in high school with behavior and the symptoms, then went away to college and developed, a binge eating disorder. And I've read a study that was done in Minnesota, in the 1950s, with healthy young men who they were almost semi-starvation diet, and then when they returned normal food to them, they developed, the obsessions with food and everything, the symptoms of anorexia. I'm just wondering how much of the binge eating is just your body's natural response to compensate for the anorexic behaviors. How much of it is physiological rather than psychological?
Okay.
Well, yeah, that is a very insightful comment that was made because the study that's being referred to is a conscientious objector study around the time of the Korean War, where they took males and starved them. And what they found is that males exhibited many of the symptoms of anorexia, preoccupation with food and weight, collecting recipes and thinking obsessively about eating, and then also when they would eat to binge eat or overeat. And so the fact is that there really is a physiology to this. There is a genetics to this as well. In fact, the genetics of anorexia are very strong. There's more of a genetic influence on risk than depression with anorexia nervosa. So I think the point that there is physiology that is driving the train that this illness is on is very important. And I think that, the thing about back to the previous point about medication, you change the physiology by getting healthy, in terms of your eating, getting at a healthy weight, eating healthy, eating three meals a day, not restricting, and dealing with stress in a healthy way. And so there's more than one way to deal with this physiology that is really contributing to the symptoms.
Hmm. David in Madison, it's your turn next. Hi, David.
Hi, thanks very much. Great show. The caller had a question earlier about medical marijuana, and I just wanted to double check. My understanding was that the Food and Drug Administration has, in fact, approved a form of marijuana that contains THC and a product called Marinol or Dronabinol. It's THC contains in that, and it's approved for wasting syndrome in AIDS patients and also nausea, which I suppose could be prescribed off-label for some of the conditions you're talking about. I just wondered if you had any thoughts about that, and I'll take my answer off here.
Yeah, there have been clinical trials using THC in anorexia, and those were shown to be ineffective, and I think that with the limited availability of this new form, Marinol, that may be something that is examined in the future. But I think the thing to really underscore about anorexia is that most people with anorexia are hungry and actually want to eat. So it's not really, you will see some patients who, when they're very restricted, will lose their kind of normal cues for hunger and fullness. But most of these patients actually are sitting there hungry all day and not letting themselves eat. So
that's not the issue then.
So it's really not the issue for the majority of patients. Mm.
Michelle in Black River Falls, it's your turn now. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. I just wanted to point out that as a former bulimic myself, he had pointed out that he recommended for people to go to not see their family physician or primary care physician and go to see an expert. I went to see my family physician, and he was a huge help. He is who turned me around. So I think that if you do have a good family physician, they can be a help.
No. So. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I just to clarify, I think that it's probably the message is to go see someone who really feels comfortable evaluating someone for an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And I think that you want to kind of go in with them being aware that that's what you're looking for. And I will say that it's great that you had a good experience with your family practice doctor. And in no way would I want to bash family practice physicians, but I do know that we do on some occasions hear stories from patients who their family has gone to great lengths to get someone in to see someone, and then the person will say, well, I don't see anything wrong, and all that work has really kind of gone down the tube. So if it takes so much work to get someone actually in to see someone that you really want to make sure that they know really how concerned you are and, you know, if they're the right person who can help you kind of deal with this.
Well, in some insurance situations, isn't it true that you have to first see your family physician before, or can the family physician just simply recommend or refer, I guess is the proper term?
Well, yeah, but I think in most medical groups, there are people who kind of specialize in different things.
Yeah,
and so in most groups, there usually is kind of an understanding about someone who has, either likes working with these patients or has more experience mm-hmm. with them. And that's why I would say that if you have the option to see who maybe has more experience with it, I think that would probably increase your chances of getting a good real assessment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Stacey, you wanted to add something,
well,
too.
Well, I did. In regard to going to your general practitioner, I think it's wonderful that this caller had a wonderful experience with that. But through the programs that we do and the individuals that we speak to, there are some real horror stories out there and actual additional damage that is done to individuals because, unfortunately, there is not enough education for the medical profession, healthcare profession mm-hmm. out there, for them to, in some cases, properly diagnose or be able to talk in a way mm-hmm. that is helpful rather than, you know, it can deter somebody actually from going on and getting treatment.
What's involved in a diagnosis, just in general terms? Are there blood tests? Is it all talking to the individual? What?
Well, that's a great question. I think that probably these disorders are kind of defined by two things. One is abnormalities of weight and nutrition, and abnormalities of cognitive symptoms. And so, really, what you need to do is you need to get a good medical assessment, an accurate height and weight. Typically, you don't want to weigh people with tons of clothes on. I mean, mm-hmm. you want them to be obviously, you know, have a nurse mm-hmm. present and make sure that it's an accurate weight and an accurate height. And that tells you, is that person healthy or not? You want to do blood testing to make sure that there are some people can develop anemia. They can have mm-hmm. abnormalities of liver and kidney function. So you want to make sure that you see if there are any signs and symptoms of chronic malnutrition with them as well. If someone has bulimia, they can be at risk for sudden death from electrolyte abnormality. So measuring serum potassium and other electrolytes is very important. And then you do have to talk to them. You have to really go through and say, okay, well, what? Take a really good weight history of weight and weight gain and weight loss. Get an idea of what they're eating generally in a 24-hour period. Make sure that they you know, ask them, are they have they ever purged or used laxatives or diuretics or these types of things, and depression, anxiety, all kinds of other illnesses that they're more likely to have. People with eating disorders have increased rates of depression, OCD, alcohol and drug abuse. So it does take a fairly comprehensive to get a good evaluation.
Yeah.
And, you know, that doesn't mean that your primary care doctor has to do all of that. But, you know, if they are having an indication that maybe it needs further follow-up, then, you know, getting the referral to see someone to spend some more time evaluating that would be appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Stacey?
Well, I just wanted to add to that. What I recommend to people is if they feel comfortable going to their primary care physician, then by all means, if that's where they feel comfortable starting, then do that. Otherwise, what I suggest is that you like Dr. Weltzien stated before, contact your insurance company, explain to them where your concerns are, and they normally or typically will put you through to the behavioral health sector of the insurance company, and then you will get a referral at that point to somebody who is specialized in that, and that really is the quickest way to get in and get help.
Tell us about your conference that's coming up on the 17th.
Well, I'm really excited about our conference, Crisis to Action Conference 2007. It's a full-day conference. It's a statewide conference, an annual conference. It's being held at the Monona Terrace Convention Center here in Madison, Wisconsin, on February 17th, Saturday. Dr. Weltzien is the keynote speaker. We have several specialists within the field giving different presentations and workshops throughout the day. We have the opportunity for participants who are accredited to earn 6 credits of continuing education through this conference. It's a great way for healthcare professionals as well as educators or professionals within the education system to get a better understanding and knowledge on eating disorders and also treatment of eating disorders. I'm really hoping that this goes well. Please register. You can go to www.cultivatinghope.org. You can get a registration form off of our website, as well as the opportunity to register online. Time's running out. Please help us. Come support us.
And it's www.cultivatinghope.org.
Correct.
And would this be also of interest to people who are sort of non-professionals? But
you know, I would really encourage. I think the family members, people who may be concerned about an illness that they may have. If you have a family member, if you're a parent, this is a great setting to really come and educate yourself and be able to ask questions about what to do or what you've done or is it a problem or how to intervene with a problem. The experts are going to be there speaking, but you're going to have people there who are going to be available to answer your questions. And I think, as I said earlier, I mean, this is a illness that really is a tragedy on a number of different levels. And this is an opportunity to come in and really educate yourself, get your questions answered. And that will help you if you do have a family member or if you yourself are suffering from this. It can help you really make hopefully better decisions in terms of how you can best recover from this problem.
Yeah.
I wanted to add to that it definitely is a wonderful opportunity for families and individuals who are affected or think that they're affected by eating disorders, that it's a great opportunity for them to network with other families as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also included in the conferences, we're having a treatment center expo following the conference where Rogers Memorial Hospital, Waukesha Memorial Hospital as well, will have information booths set up. We also have information from treatment centers across the nation that our participants can take with. We'll be able to provide the opportunity to purchase books,
mm-hmm.
and tools to help with eating disorders and to even educate yourself further.
So there's lots to learn and to see by attending this conference. It's again, the title of the conference again is?
Crisis to Action Conference 2007.
And you can go online to the website, the Seeds of Hope website, which is actually cultivatinghope.org. As an aside, Seeds of Hope will take you to a seed company, so
yes.
We don't want to do that. So go to, or you can, but go to cultivatinghope.org. www.bulimiaprevention.org. And you'll find out what else is on, everything that's on at the conference. And it'll also give you a registration information and how you can get involved. And I want to thank you both very much for being with us today. Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry.
Ted Welton, Dr. Ted is a medical director of eating disorder services at Rogers Memorial Hospital in Oconomowoc. Stacy McNatt is the person who started Seeds of Hope. It's an organization, great organization, that is hosting this conference. Thanks for listening.